From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. When the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the ban on corporate contributions in January, majority Democrats at the Iowa State House expressed outrage and promised swift action to make any corporate giving more transparent. But minority Republicans say unions have had similar access to the political system for years, and there's no need to demonize corporations. This hour, we'll discuss the integrity of Iowa's campaigns with the state's leading watchdog and the Republican and Democratic state party chairs. That's coming up next on The Exchange, but first, the news. Good morning. I'm Janine Beck, and we are live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building in Des Moines, and this is The Exchange. My guest for the first half of today's program, the Executive Director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, Charlie Smithson. In January, the Supreme Court struck down a major provision of campaign finance reform, clearing the way for more corporate and union money in politics. In the 5-4 decision, the court maintained restrictions on direct donations by corporations to candidates and political parties, but corporations will be able to spend on television commercials and other forms of communications. Mr. Smithson, is this a big deal in Iowa?
I think it has the potential to be a big deal in Iowa because it's a sea change from what we've seen before. Iowa was like about half of the states that had restrictions on what corporations can do, and now they have much greater freedoms to do certain things politically than what they had before. I think there's some office pools out there about how much they're really going to do it, but it has the potential.
There have been varying opinions on how much potential, as you're saying, office pools. Republicans saying, oh, this is not that big of a deal. This is a matter of free speech. They have the right to have input. Democrats saying this is a major seismic shift in the way campaigns are run and that they should not have this voice. The corporations can't vote, therefore shouldn't have an individual voice financially. Do you have an opinion on what we'll see?
I think clearly that you will see corporate bodies that will want to engage in independent expenditure advocacy, which they can now do with their First Amendment rights. I think it's a natural outcome. We've already had a couple of advisory opinion requests from corporate entities. Now, these have been more politically influenced corporate entities, but that have some interest in doing these kind of things, and they're exploring the boundaries of the law and what they can now do. So I think you'll see some activity in this area.
And Republicans are also quick to point out that this does give some more flexibility to unions as well, which they say, I mean, that's a leveling of the playing field. So will we see a stronger voice out of unions in the next election as well?
In Iowa, it was different than what it was federally. Okay. In Iowa, unions could already do a lot of this kind of activity, so it balanced it out in Iowa from that standpoint. Federally, both unions and corporations were subject to the same ban. That was not true in Iowa before. So I think you'll see less of that activity on unions because they could already do it if they so chose.
While you and I are speaking here, the Iowa Senate is in and possibly could bring up debate yet this hour on Senate File 2354, which is the legislation drawn up to sort of try to deal with this Supreme Court ruling. It would require authorization from a board of directors for political speech. So if Corporation A wants to contribute or run campaign ads, they would have to get at least some discretion or direction from their board of directors. And they'd have to file campaign disclosure reports with your board, just like any other campaign. They'd have to file electronically so that it would be timely for citizens. And then when they run the campaign ad, they'd have to have that attribution statement at the end. This ad paid for by, you know, Swift Boat. This ad paid for by the Mike Whalen campaign. Whatever it would be, they would have to have that attribution at the end so that voters would know. What do you think of this legislation?
The original bill had some kind of probably enforcement and constitutional concerns attached to it. There have been some amendments that have been filed that I think will address some of those concerns and move us closer to having a constitutional piece of legislation. It's focused a lot on disclosure of activities as opposed to trying to prohibit things, because now the Supreme Court has said you can't prohibit independent expenditures by corporate bodies. So I think there's more of a transparency aspect to it. And originally, the bill called for there to be some sort of shareholder approval. They've moved away from that and just said it's got to be by the board of directors or some other governing body that will say, yes, we approve of you doing independent expenditure, so choose. So I think the Senate has looked at some of these issues and tried to make it easier for these entities to participate in the process, yet get disclosure and capture those activities under the state's campaign law. So I think if the amendments are adopted, it'll be a nice balance for everyone's interests in this area.
I know for you, maybe you don't take a political stance on these things or a stance at all, but is the right balance to let everyone participate but just have disclosure, or should there be limitations, or is that something you weigh in on?
Your first question was, do I have a political take on things? And to keep my job, no.
That's right.
I usually don't. My personal preference has always been, as a regulator in this area, has been disclosure. And leave it up to the voters to decide if they like the message and who's giving the message. Iowa doesn't have contribution limits, for example, like 38 other states do. I mean, so you can take a politician out to eat. You could only pay $3 of their meal under the gift law, but you could give them a campaign contribution of $100,000. So, I mean, there's some strange things like that. But we've not been a big prohibition state, but more of a disclosure state. So as long as we're getting the transparency aspects of this, I'm comfortable in the direction we're headed.
Mm-hmm. One of the other pieces of legislation that was worked on this year, speaking of transparency, there are a couple others. One, dealing with draft candidate movements. Many of us remember this fall when former Governor Terry Branstad, many people wanted him to join the race. He was considering it. In fact, some people felt like he was already in the race when we still had this draft Branstad movement running advertisements requesting that he join the race. Some felt like, he's in the race now. Let's treat this more like a campaign. So there's been legislation that'll deal with that. Tell me about that.
What was interesting is this fall we saw a draft Branstad movement, and he had not yet declared whether or not he was going to be a candidate. So the campaign laws really didn't apply. And in fact, there were people connected with the draft Branstad movement who said, we want to register as a campaign committee and we want to file reports to your board. But there were campaign laws that they would have violated had they have done that. For example, you cannot have a PAC that advocates for or against only one candidate. So if they had tried to comply with the campaign laws, they'd actually been in violation. So we went in this session, and the General Assembly agreed with us that you can do these types of draft movements in the future before the candidate's announced whether or not he or she's going to get in, and they can have a PAC that's going to advocate for only one or for against only one candidate. They file the reports, and they're going to be just like any other kind of PAC. So that's just awaiting the governor's signature, but you'll see more disclosure of those kind of activities in the future, and they will be treated like any other campaign committee in Iowa, which I think was a good step for people on both sides of the aisle to have disclosure of that, because that was probably going to be the new way of campaigning here.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, isn't this just tactically campaigning on behalf of a candidate? Because they don't do this without the candidate's permission for the most part, do they? I mean, they're not out there doing these draft movements when the candidate's saying, whoa, I really don't want to get in this race, typically.
I would assume not, but I don't know that you can say that in every case, and I don't know if Governor Branstad what
because he's not the only one to use this kind of movement.
Well, and if it works once, we all know that people are going to use it more and more.
Sure.
And in fact, they do it in other states and federally, and they had captured disclosure of that before. So it was just something that we needed to address in Iowa, because if it works once, people are going to do it in the future. And we didn't want to have the kind of situation like you said, where somebody's going to say, let's get a group out there campaigning for 3 years. I won't announce what I'm going to do, and then all of a sudden I jump in. So we're going to get disclosure of that future forward.
All right. You've been a big proponent of electronic filing for a couple of reasons. And tell me, is there legislation moving on that as well?
There's been legislation that's passed both chambers waiting the governor's signature that would expand electronic filing to more of the county central committees and to county city school committees if they raise over a certain dollar threshold. Because our electronic filing system is now easier to use, we're encouraging more people to do it. We have a searchable database, which makes for greater transparency of campaign transactions, and we expanded that this summer to include county city school committees. Before, they weren't in that searchable database. Now they are. So now you can type in somebody's name and see all sorts of different contributors that you couldn't see before. So, and that wouldn't take effect till January 1 of 2011 for these locals. But we're really encouraging people because we need that greater transparency. And because it's electronically through the internet, You can go anywhere and file your report, and we don't care who does it for you. I mean, a lot of people are concerned. I've had my treasurer for 30 years. He or she doesn't want to learn how to use a computer. I don't care. Find some 12-year-old kid that is computer literate. They can file your stuff for you and just have your treasurer be your bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing more sophistication from Iowa committees and that this will be pretty seamless moving forward.
We're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. We're speaking with Executive Director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, Charlie Smithson, talking about the integrity of Iowa's elections and some legislation moving this session to, as one lawmaker put it, put some sunshine, continue the sunshine into Iowa's election process and make sure Iowans know who they're voting for and who's advertising behind that candidate. Let me ask you, if you want to join the conversation first before I ask Charlie another question, 1-866-780-9100. Again, that phone number, 1-866-780-9100. Electronic filings are great in the sense that you have all this, but are Iowans bothering to access it? Who's using that? Who's going on that database and searching? Is anyone using it?
I know that people from both of the main political parties use it quite a bit.
Sort of act as watchdogs on each other.
Absolutely. They're my biggest clients, frankly. And really, I think more and more people from the public are starting to use it as they understand it. And it's pretty simple right now. And what I would say to people is go out, type in somebody's last name. Just start with that and see who that person gives to. Or you can do kind of fun things and type in a zip code and see everybody from a certain zip code of all the committees that they give to. So you can kind of play with it, and you can use different numbers and variables. You can see everybody that gives over a certain dollar amount. So I think more and more people are accessing that thing, and it's not just political insider baseball anymore, that more and more people from the public are using it. And I would really encourage them to. It's fascinating to see the money given and where it comes from in this state.
Will they be saddened or pleased that they know this information or surprised? All of the above.
Certainly surprised, and campaign contributions are always kind of in the eye of the beholder, whether or not it's a good thing or not. But I would really encourage people to use that system. It really is just a fascinating tool to see.
You might find out something about your neighbor, make for an interesting dinner party, right?
Well, that is always one of the maybe drawbacks about it. You can always snoop and see what your neighbors in your zip code or on your street are doing. That is true. Even better than looking to see how many campaign yard signs they have in their yard.
That's true. That's the first giveaway, right?
It seems to be.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We want you to join our conversation after the break at 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. This is Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and we are live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, where I'm speaking with the Executive Director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, Charlie Smithson. We're talking about some of the legislation that is currently moving through the chambers to shore up Iowa's election laws and then tighten them in some ways, and dealing with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Overall, I don't know if you get together with colleagues from other states, have meetings and conferences. What is Iowa's reputation? Iowans seem to think we have clean elections, but is that really true?
I think, based on some of the conversations I've had with my colleagues and some of the stuff I see from other states, we have a very clean system here, and we're not trying to do systematic changes as much as just tweaks and cleaning out some of the bad apples. But it's certainly not like what you'd see in other states, and I don't want to name any of them, embarrass those states, but our system here is really good, and both of the political parties do a good job of coaching their people up to comply with the law. And a lot of what we just see is mostly somebody didn't know. Mm-hmm. So as long as we can continue to educate people. And then the other big problem we have is somebody loses a campaign and then they say, I don't want to file any more campaign reports, I'm done. Well, you still have to close out the system. And so a lot of my job is trying to hassle candidates who have lost and say, you're not quite done yet. You got to finish up with me. But overall, I think we have a pretty clean system, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't continue tweaking, which we do every year. I have some legislation up here that passes to address things that we see during each election cycle.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Our number this morning, 1-866-780-9100. Sharon is calling from Johnston. Sharon, thanks for calling the Exchange.
Thank you. I heard on the television just one time that since this ruling came down, that businesses, corporations, organizations have found a loophole in that Chamber of Commerce's can take in as much money as they want from any source and then fund the campaign ads, but are not required to disclose who was giving the money for that campaign ad. And I was wondering if this is a loophole that we need to change, if it is one that exists.
One of the amendments to Senate File 2354 would require disclosure by these groups if they get money for political purposes. What we don't want to do, let's use the example of a car dealership. The three of us go and we buy cars, and then some of that money gets used for a political ad. I don't think our name should show up on a campaign disclosure report just because we bought cars. But if we gave money to the car dealership and they were for political purposes, then we should be disclosed. So that's what one of the amendments to Senate File 2354 would capture: money given for political purposes. So Sharon, that is being addressed in this legislation.
Oh, good.
Sharon, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk to Bob in Bettendorf. Bob, thanks so much for calling the Exchange.
There's a lot of talk about the high cost of government. But, for example, in Davenport, you have to file a Freedom of Information form to find out how much some of these public employees in Davenport are making, how much they're earning. I think that should be on the Internet.
All right. Bob, I think that might be a little out of your purview, but Charlie, are there other things that your office deals with like that?
Not that particular issue. We deal with a lot of executive branch ethics issues. That's gift and conflict of interest. But we don't get into posting on the Internet how much a government official makes. Of course, if you're a state employee, the Des Moines Register posts all of our salaries on a searchable website, but that's not done for local. I understand his point, but beyond the purview of my board to handle.
You know, your office was in the news. I wouldn't say you guys didn't make the news, but was in the news last session a little bit with the arrest of a lawmaker after a legislative function. And Kerry Burt from Waterloo was arrested for drunk driving, charged. He'd been at a reception hosted by, I think, a pharmaceutical group. Talk to me about your role in that. They hadn't filed in a timely fashion, so there was a little bit of scuttlebutt about that. But, I mean, are the gift laws adequate? Are they the right kind of laws to make sure that lawmakers are able to meet and greet with lobbyists but not be paid off by them?
One of the strange parts about that was we have kind of a bifurcated system in Iowa. If it's a legislative branch official employee, the House and Senate Ethics Committees oversees that. If it's someone out of the executive branch of state government, I oversee that. If it's someone at the county city school level, it's through the county attorney. So that can be kind of confusing, A. But B, what happened, if there was a function held during legislative session where all 150 legislators are invited to attend, anyone in the world can go to those things. And the $3 gift law that we talked about earlier doesn't apply, but the sponsor had to file a report. The problem was that those reports were only filed with the General Assembly, not with me, and there were some enforcement concerns. A piece of legislation that's already passed this year, already been signed into law, says from now on that a sponsor of one of those functions has to file notice before the event. They file it both with the General Assembly and my board, and then they have to do a detailed report showing how much they spend for food, beverage, and entertainment at that function afterwards. Again, a report goes both to the General Assembly and to the Ethics Board. So we have some enforcement mechanism of that, and that came about as a result of that situation that you raised, because there were some executive branch people that were at that event, and I didn't have any control over that. I didn't have any enforcement mechanism, and so technically there were some gift law vagrancies there that we now have straightened out legislatively this session. And all of those reports are posted on the websites of both the General Assembly and the Ethics Board. So we've got a lot of good public transparency of that particular exception to the gift law.
But that is a strange law in the sense that I can't personally buy a lawmaker something for more than $3, but I can throw a really lavish party as long as I let all lawmakers come.
And
is
that,
that a, I mean, do you, is that a disparity that works, or is it one that needs to be fixed?
Well, at least we get public disclosure of those kind of things. One of the reasons that that was put in the law about 5 years ago was the thought that legislators and staff and the regulated community were not able to engage each other outside of this process, and maybe everyone would put away the sword and shield of partisanship a little bit, versus the fact that you're right, you couldn't take somebody out to eat privately and spend more than $3. One of the things they talk about doing every once in a while is just saying, let's get rid of the gift law completely, but you have to file a report showing every time you get a gift. I don't know if that's good or bad. We're talking about a lot of paperwork. So,
and then that, but that's also personal accountability versus, I mean, if they have to file every time, they can just choose not to file.
You have some enforcement concerns there. So I think it's just easier to have an exception for these kind of functions held only during legislative session. We do get some disclosure of it versus gutting the gift law and trying to go to something where you're having to disclose every time something happens. I know other states have tried that, and it's not really worked out all that well. So I kind of like Iowa's system being pretty strict, but then having disclosure of this particular limited exception.
All right. So overall, is this session for your office going to be beneficial? Are you getting what you need?
So far this session, absent that I've not seen the final budget numbers, of course,
sure,
which is, you know, always important to my office being the smallest agency in terms of budget and staff. Legislatively, it's been a very good session for us. This year's General Assembly has done a lot for transparency and the good of both campaign finance, lobbying, and governmental ethics, the three areas I deal with. So I'm very happy with the way this session's gone so far.
And the law dealing with corporate financing, you think will be adequate to level the playing field, or as much as they can, given the ruling?
Need to see what happens in the Senate probably today. And then, of course, we're dealing with some time frames. I mean, that's got to get over to the House. What are they going to do with it this week? What's it going to look like over there? So I think that's a story that's still
What advice would you have for them?
Move quickly and make a baby step. Let's get something to deal with what we need to deal with, and then if we need to tweak down the road, do so. But let's get something that's constitutional first and foremost. It doesn't do any good to pass some massive piece of legislation if we're just back in court and we lose in 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, you know, their goal is to have something done prior to the November election, but if it can't stand up in court, then you haven't done any good.
It doesn't do us any good except add to my win-loss record in a bad way.
And the Senate bill that's currently up for debate or will be possibly later today, does, in your opinion, withstand constitutional muster?
With an amendment or two that we need on there, I think it would.
Mm-hmm. All right. What other concerns, if any, we only have a few seconds left, though, do Iowans come to you about, or do you want them to know about the system?
We get a lot of questions about the gift law, and one of the things with all of these early retirements and furloughs and other things, mm-hmm. people need to remember that state employees have certain restrictions on what employments they can do for 2 years after leaving state government. So if you're getting ready to hire a former state employee, please call my office first and let's make sure they can really take that job and do what you want them to do, because there's nothing worse than hiring somebody and finding out they can't take that job or they can't do that work for 2 years.
And so you mean lobbying or what are you?
There's certain restrictions on the ability to be lobbyists as well as just certain other kinds of employments that they can't do for 2 years. So that's going to be a big part of my agency's mission over the next 6 or 7 months is dealing with that, as a lot of people are going to be leaving state government due to budget reasons.
All right. Charlie Smithsman, the executive director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, thanks so much for your time today. You're listening to The Exchange. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. For the second half of today's program, the chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, Michael Kiernan, and the chairman of the Republican Party of Iowa, Matt Strawn, are my guests. Thank you both for being here. We've been talking in the first half about Iowa's campaign finance laws and some changes the legislature's looking at in the wake of a Supreme Court ruling dealing with corporate financing of campaigns. And I want to read through a couple of quotes for you and then get your opinion on what this ruling means to the political landscape in Iowa coming up for the November election. Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat from Wisconsin, who was one of the fathers of the campaign finance law, called it a terrible mistake. He said the American people will pay dearly for this decision when more than ever their voices are drowned out by corporate spending in our federal elections. In the coming weeks, I will work with my colleagues to pass legislation restoring as many of the critical restraints on corporate control of our elections as possible. However, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, praised the decision. He said for too long, some in this country have been deprived of full participation in the political process. With today's monumental decision, the Supreme Court took an important step in the right direction of restoring the First Amendment rights to these groups by ruling that the Constitution protects their rights to express themselves about political candidates and issues up till Election Day. So I just want to get your take. Mr. Kiernan, what does this mean for the Iowa Democratic Party, if anything, in the upcoming election?
You know, I a couple quick things. I mean, right now, the Iowa Democratic Party and the Iowa Republican Party can receive corporate contributions. They're used in terms of the building fund. Mm-hmm. In terms of the upcoming election, you know, certainly, just to take a step back, you know, on our side of the fence, when I'm out talking with Democrat activists across the state, you know, outside of a constitutional law perspective, you know, I think it's something that's very disturbing to the Iowans that I speak to. I think they believe right now their voices are already drowned out by money in the process. And I think they see this as a large now loophole that will really drown out their voices. So for us coming into this general election cycle, I know that, you know, there's proposed legislation, and I think it's troubling to allow corporate contributions into individual candidates. But I guess I'll also ask the chair of the Republican Party. I mean, right now, the Iowa Democratic Party can take corporate contributions for their building funds, but that's the limit of it. So how it affects this upcoming election cycle will just depend largely on how this legislature deals with it and where we go from there. In terms of, I know that one of the things that's been talked about before, from dollars from unions or other special interest groups, it really doesn't change that. I think what you'll see is some other special interest groups become more powerful. I know when I was in Washington, D.C., for the Democratic National Committee, one of the things that was mentioned was the money that would flow into the chambers of commerce across the country.
I think the legislature, at least Charlie Smithson said, is trying to close that loophole.
Yeah, and I think that's very disconcerting for a lot of folks, because then they don't know what corporations are giving money. It goes into another organization, and that organization then uses that as an umbrella to pump money into individual campaigns. And again, I think it comes back for the folks that I talk to in my party, is they believe that their voices are already drowned out by money and special interests in politics, and they would like to move away from that, and they see this as a real setback.
Mr. Strawn, sure. Mitch McConnell seemed to suggest this was a fair and reasonable conclusion, that corporations have a right to advertise on behalf of candidates.
Well, and before we get into, I guess, the impact here on the ground in Iowa as we head into November, you know, philosophically, you know, the Republican Party wants to make sure that we've got full disclosure and transparency in whatever our campaign finance laws are. I think Chairman Kiernan and I, you know, having been around politics for a number of years, understand the money is going to find its way into politics no matter what the rules of the game are. Now, in past years, it's been under the guise of 527 groups, 501c4 groups that often have a very, very attractive sounding name, and you don't really know who the money is behind it. So from a speech standpoint, certainly they have the ability to speak as a corporation with this ruling. But the most important thing is, when we establish the rules governing that here in Iowa, let's make sure that it's fully disclosed, fully transparent, because at the end of the day, that empowers the voter. That empowers the member of the members of the media to actually take a look and see, okay, you know, this corporation is advocating for the election or defeat of this representative. Now let's see where that matches up with the policies that particular politician may oppose or favor. So in many ways, this puts more information in the hands of the voters to make an educated decision at the ballot box. Now here in Iowa, like Chairman Kiernan said, the party committees do have the ability to accept corporate contributions for very limited purposes. I just want to make sure that we have a level playing field, that whatever a corporation and its you know, employees and shareholders here can do applies to whether it's the organized labor movement or any other organization, that the rules of the game are the same for no matter who's who's making the contribution.
You're listening to Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Before I move off of that topic and on to just general races, let me just ask you overall, quick statement from both of you. What about Iowa's election process? Is it clean as the reputation, or do you have concerns about it? And I'll start with you, Mr. Kiernan.
If I could just jump back before I answer that question. I think Chairman Strawn and I completely agreed that, I mean, that we've worked overtime and worked together on a nonpartisan basis to keep Iowa's caucuses first in the nation. Mm-hmm. And we understand the importance of clean elections, and so do Iowans. And we're going to continue to strive to keep it that way. And one of the things that I think that, you know, was kind of touched on that we move forward that they're going to be addressing here, they are addressing it this session, is, are these 527s, these shadow organizations? And, you know, something that obviously I think was disturbing not only to people in my party, but obviously to people in Mr. Strawn's party as well, was this draft Terry Branstad movement that occurred in the late summer, early fall. And I don't say that just as the Democratic Party chair, but I'm sure there are folks in the Republican Party who thought, well, that, you know, that it's not
other candidates who
other candidates. It's not an even playing field because you can't track the contributions. You don't know what's going on. And those that are playing by the rules that file the normal disclosure reports and they feel like they've been kind of shut out of the process. So I just wanted to quickly jump back to that. And then, of course, again, your question about moving forward. I personally, you know, there's been a lot of talk about who controls the chambers and how that affects redistricting. Everybody that's been involved in redistricting here in this state knows that it, you know, first it goes to a computer, and mm-hmm. the computer spits out a map. And you get so many times before you can say yes or no to that. And then that power is taken out of their hands altogether. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's ever been a dispute between party that, you know, parties really don't play a role in the redistricting process. I think that's been largely overhyped by some folks that may not be involved in the process. And we're very proud of that as Iowans. And mm-hmm. I think we need to keep it that way, because no matter what party's in control, it's about clean and fair elections.
And I think that is something that Iowa does wear as a, you know, as a badge of honor and a trump card, quite frankly, in the caucus process when other states want to try and jump us in line to be first in the nation in the mm-hmm. presidential primaries. But it is something, when you're sitting in my seat, requires constant vigilance. I know during the 2008 elections, certainly with Iowa being a swing state historically in a presidential year, there were anecdotal reports of, you know, different things happening at voting booths with same-day registration and some of those things. I believe in Linn County there may have been some prosecutions with people that registered to vote at a hotel, for example. So I think one thing that the party should work for is to make sure, now that we are a same-day registration state and voting starts about 40 days before Election Day, that we're working together to make sure that our elections remain clean, honest, and fair.
All right. We want to take your calls this morning, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. I want to just start with some campaign news that came out last week. We had a couple of big announcements, but one of those being that Jonathan Narcisse, a former Des Moines school board member, a local publisher, wants to get into the race as a Democratic candidate and challenge Governor Chet Culver in the primary. Says if he doesn't win the primary, he'll be on the ballot as an independent. Will the party remain neutral, or do you oppose it because you have a sitting governor?
Well, look, there's no secret that that myself personally, I've always been a strong supporter and longtime friend of the governor's. And so personally, as chairman, I can't remove my bias for the governor. I believe in him. I've been with him since 1997, and I'll continue to fight for him. In terms of the party, it is a unique circumstance. I met with John several weeks ago, I think actually about a month ago, and talked with him. And at that time, he was unclear whether he was going to run just in the general election or the Democratic primary. I've known John. I served in, as you know, local government as an at-large city council member, familiar with John in terms of his service on the school board. We're the Democratic Party, you know, I'm going to have to circle around with a lot of the state central committee members and have conversations with them. I have gotten some calls of concern. It's not typically normal. I think Chairman Strawn would recognize this. It's a unique circumstance when someone says they're going to run as a Democrat, but yet they already announced that they will run as an independent. And so it's this is a place that I have not been personally, and I don't think many in our party have been personally dealt with. So moving forward, I'm not sure how the state central committee members will respond to that and other Democratic activists, because he's announced that he will run no matter what. as an independent in the fall. So,
and typically the party, though, frowns on challenging an incumbent. Not always, but I mean, Ed Fallon wasn't roundly applauded when he challenged Leonard Boswell. Talk to me about that. I mean, is there some negative feelings just because you're challenging an incumbent or a sitting governor?
Well, from a chair's perspective, those folks that are Democrats that have won seats, I think you saw me say on Iowa Press earlier this year that we would support our incumbents in the legislature. I stand by that. I believe that's very important for a party's strength. I certainly recognize everybody's right to run, and we create a fair process at the party for those that want to challenge other incumbents. However, at the same time, I think it's important to understand, is it personal or is it about party? This is an interesting circumstance. Like I said, the folks that I've talked to in the party, there's a lot of people left scratching their heads because we've never had somebody announce, even Ed Fallon, never announced and said that he would run as an independent in the general election. So there's some things to figure out. And obviously, there's a long road, too. He says this today, but who knows? May not be on the ballot. So it kind of leaves you in a tough position because from a party standpoint and party activist standpoint, there's a lot of people that frown on the fact that he's already said he would run as an independent.
All right. Mr. Strawn, sure. Last week, Republican Christopher Rance, former House Speaker, current representative from Sioux City, pulled out of the gubernatorial race ahead of, the primary. Filing deadlines coming up. How many do you expect to still be in that primary race when we get to the end of the filing deadline?
Right now, taking all three gentlemen at their word, I anticipate we will have three Republicans.
Roberts.
Rod Roberts, representative from Carroll, Bob Vanderplaats from Sioux City, and, of course, former Governor Branstad. But when we look at, to touch upon the question you asked Chairman Kiernan, when we look at what's happening here in Iowa with the primary challenge for Governor Culver, we need to take a look and see that that's consistent with what is actually happening nationally to vulnerable Democrats. I believe today there's a United States senator down in Arkansas, a Democrat United States senator, who is now facing a statewide primary from one of the statewide elected Democrats. We've seen the Obama White House clear out vulnerable Democrats like David Patterson, governor of New York, Doug Ritter, governor of Colorado. They understand that they're in peril all across this country. And I think what we're seeing here in Iowa with John Narcisse's announcement is evidence of that. You've seen Ed Fallon say that there's very serious concerns when they look at someone like Chet Culver, who has the lowest approval ratings of any Iowa governor in over 40 years. So they're very concerned about their prospects going into November, and I think that's what's driving some of that angst we're seeing in the Democrat Party.
All right, let's go to the phones and talk to Rebecca from Des Moines. I think Rebecca has a follow-up to this. Rebecca, thanks for calling The Exchange this morning.
Hi. Well, I have a question for the chairman. Governor Culver is not polling very well in Iowa, and he said that he's not worried about it. Do you think that he should be?
Assume she means you, Mr. Kiernan.
Yes, because there's two chairmen here, obviously. But no, I appreciate the question. I think what the governor was articulating there was that right now, because of the times that we're in, the largest economic downturn since the Great Depression, and obviously the folks out there know that we've dealt with the fourth largest natural disaster in our country's history, that right now he's got to focus on being governor and making tough decisions and moving the state forward. Certainly, as a political strategist, am I concerned about polls? I'm always concerned about polls. But interesting sidebar to that, within a week and a half window, there were three separate polls. And all three separate polls showed different numbers. And if you've been a student of Iowa politics, you could just ask Governor Lightfoot and see what he says about polls. And Terry Branstad's numbers, he was at a 37% approval rating. There's a lot of real estate between now and the general election. And I think what he has to do, and I think he's got the right approach, he needs to focus on being governor, moving the state forward, getting through the legislative session. Then we'll get into campaigns. Then we'll get into politics. I want to touch on one thing that Chairman Strawn had mentioned before we went into taking questions here from the audience. He talked about that the governor here and the Democrats nationally are in trouble and they're seeing primaries. I guess as someone who is a always been a political strategist, I would push back on that and say, I think what you're seeing is a much different environment. And I don't think it's not just about Democrats, and because Republicans are included. Like, let's take a look at Senator John McCain. he faces a very tough, rigorous primary ballot or opponent. So, I mean, I think the times that we're living in, I think that
you think it's an incumbent issue versus a party issue.
I do. I mean, let's take a look. I really believe that that this is not specifically about party. People want progress. They want change. But you can look across the field. There's been a lot of Republicans.
That can't be good news, though, for Democrats if you're the party in majority right now and it's an anti-incumbent feeling.
Well, look, no, I would say this to you. I think that people are scared. There has been a lot that's transpired. Democrats have dealt the hand that they've been given from the Bush administration in trying to move this country forward. This isn't talking points. This is realistic and real. This is a real approach. And there is a lot of real estate between now and the general election. And anybody who's followed politics knows it. But to sit here and say that Democrats are the only ones who are seeing primaries or quitting, this is not true. Republicans are resigning from office and not running, seeking reelection. Senator McCain, I mean, I don't know if there's any more prominent Republican in the Republican Party side. He's facing a rigorous battle in a primary. So I think it's the mood of the public. And I think what they want to see progress. They want to see forward movement. And I think that there's and you saw folks with the Tea Party even said this isn't about, they're not just lining up with the GOP. There's lots of them that are Democrats and Republicans. There are people out there that have just a lot of anxiety right now.
What's going on in the governor's campaign? Governor Culver's campaign finance director Grace Van Cleave and deputy campaign manager Jesse Harris both resigned last week. That follows a departure 3 months ago of his campaign manager, Andrew Ruse. Why the staff turnover?
Well, there are a lot of individual stories there, just like as there are in any company or any kind of business in life. I mean, one is Jesse Harris is an example. Just, you know, he's a tremendous individual. He's got a lot of talent, a lot of experience. He was offered a job in the Secretary of State's office. For him, it was a huge career opportunity to move forward in life. I can't begrudge him of that. Certainly, as you know, things happen, and a lot of these folks that come in on campaigns aren't from Iowa. So a lot of them move here, may want to stay here, may want to move on. So campaigns are a different political environment. I wouldn't read too much into that. I've been with him since 1997 and continually helped him put together a ground game. That's what my strength is. That's what I try to bring to the table as chair of this party, is a nuts and bolts operation, less of a chairman that's front and center and more of a person that puts a ground game in place.
Mr. Strawn, there are difficulties within the Republican Party as well. You have conservative groups saying that if Mr. Vanderplaats does not win the Republican nomination, they will not support a former Governor Terry Branstad's
race. I'm aware
race.
Of one group saying that.
One group. I don't mean to say all conservatives by any means, but there is a group and a largely vocal group, let me put it that way. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I think time will tell, to be honest with you. There's going to be all sorts of third-party groups that will make endorsements in not just the gubernatorial primary, but in the general election. And in my position as party chair, you know, we're neutral in this. The Republican Party of Iowa needs to stay out of the gubernatorial primary. Our job is to build the electoral apparatus that our nominee will use that first Wednesday in June. So the decision needs to be made by those Republican voters in the primary in June. And I think that goes a long way to healing any of those divisions. Because what I hear as I go around the state from Republicans and even some of those disaffected independents is they're tired of a handful of party-elected insiders making a decision for everyone. And they want to make that decision for themselves. So I think time will tell. But right now I'm very optimistic about the three individuals we have running for governor. And I'm convinced that whoever comes out on top in June will be the next governor of the state.
I want to talk about some of the races down the ballot, but let me just mention this first. But when I look at the Terry Branstad, Roxanne Conlin back in these races, when they ran, I was in sixth grade when they were both running for an open seat. When they were running for the governor's seat, I was in sixth grade. We had to write a report about the race. I mean, never in my mind did I think this many years later, and I'm dating myself just a bit here, those would be the two again running. Right. Is this a positive, or does this say something about a lack of fresh faces in the two parties? And Mr. Strawn, I'll start with you. I mean, could the Republicans not come up with a fresher candidate? Is that the issue, or is it somebody with old wisdom coming for it?
Well, as Jeanine is one who I believe was in the third grade during that pitched battle in 1982, I certainly understand where you're coming from on this.
Do you have pictures, Matt? I want to see pictures
out of Keystone Elementary. Yeah. You know, it kind of goes to what I was talking about a minute ago, though. It isn't the job of the party chairman to go out there and say, this person is our candidate. That needs to be done by Republicans voting and people stepping up to say, I want to be this state's next governor as a Republican. And, you know, in talking with, you know, whether it's Rod Roberts, Bob Vanderplaats, the other individuals have subsequently dropped out, or Governor Branstad. Governor Branstad, when he told me that he was going to take this step, he has a love for Iowa in his heart and is absolutely disillusioned with what has happened to this state. So, there's nothing wrong with somebody that wants to come back and serve a state that has served it so ably in the past.
All right. One of the arguments Roxanne Conlon is making against Grassley is that he's been in office too long and that they need a fresh face. But I'm not quite sure she's the fresh face some people would think. As someone who's, I think, younger than me, Mr. Kiernan, what do you think about that being your candidate of choice? That's yet to be determined, first of all. That's right. She has two primary candidates who are eager to be the candidate against Grassley.
Well, I would tell you she is a fresh face. There's a big difference here when we talk about Terry Branstad and Roxanne Conlon. Roxanne Conlon did not serve in office. So I think that's a big difference. She's gone out and she's lived a life and she wants to take that experience. Typically the Senate has always been seen as a place, with a little bit more wisdom. It's not typically seen, where young Turks go. It's usually that's Congress. So I think that Roxanne, in terms of being a fresh face, she's absolutely a fresh face and a fresh voice. And let's not forget, we talk about poll numbers and look, Senator Grassley's poll numbers are an all-time low. They've dropped more than 23 points in 4 months. So I think he's vulnerable. I think he's been in office since 1958. So now it depends on what your definition of fresh is. You have someone since 1958 that's been in office, or someone who's not served an elective office, but who's always stayed diligent and very active. So I think it's about the definition of being fresh, and there's no doubt about it. She is going to give him the race of his life if she makes it through the primary.
Right. I will say, though, if Chuck Grassley is vulnerable being 20 points ahead in a poll, I can't imagine what that makes Governor Culver, who's about 12 to 15 points down at the moment.
Let's go down the ballot. As we spoke earlier today, Story County Republican Dave Jamieson announced his bid for state treasurer, going up against Michael Fitzgerald, who's held that office as a Democrat for more than 20 years, I believe. As we look down those races, will we see a pitched battle in every one of those? Secretary of Agriculture, Attorney General, State Auditor, will you field candidates in every one of those state elected races, Mr. Kiernan?
Well, I can tell you that's our goal right now. We can see, and everybody always wants us to share a game plan early night, but I think you have to wait to see until the petitions are filed or maybe even the convention. But yes, it's our goal to have those races contested.
Mr. Strawn?
I tell you what, that's what we're most excited about when you talk about fresh faces and the fact that I would argue it's not necessarily anti-incumbency, but anti-Democrat majority. We have pitched primaries to be our nominee for Secretary of State, for State Treasurer, for legislative races. In fact, we got a dynamic young woman that's going to be running against Tom Miller, who I believe was first elected the state's Attorney General in 1978. So we're very excited about the new faces that are showing up for this and our congressional primaries as well.
He ran against Terry Branstad, that, right? Who is he?
I want you to both come back sometime because I've thoroughly enjoyed this, but we're out of town. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for listening.